Welcome to the 20% Truth Podcast, Season 2, Dubious Creatures, Episode 5, Chaos. I'm Carolyn Rahaman. Marcy had two goals. The first was to get a six-digit Instagram following. Six digits, even if the first digit was a one, was impressive. It was a platform. It was something she could put on her art school applications. It was something that could get her attention, help her sell some pieces. She would write her handle on her business cards, which she imagined as a classy white cardstock with her embossed name and an embossed koi. Her second goal was to get her portfolio together. Before the end of the summer, she said. She was going to have the pieces for it by mid-August. She would put it together before the school year. Her 100,000 Instagram followers would cheer her on. Marcy's summer job at the art museum allowed her plenty of time to draw. Her station was at the side entrance, the accessible entrance, which served a daily average of one person in a wheelchair, two moms with strollers, and four people who came in the wrong door, either because they were confused or because they were trying to avoid the line upstairs. She really ought to send those people around to the front entrance, but... well, they weren't doing any harm. Her only jobs were to sell tickets, point to the restroom, and feed the koi. The koi pond on the lower level was surrounded by a spiral staircase that rose four floors through the museum above. The fish were supposed to draw people down, but the visitors all seemed to know, even without investigating, that there wasn't anything on the lower level but the fish and the bathroom. The bathroom drew down a few people, who would watch the fish from up close while waiting for their friend to finish up. But most of the visitors preferred to watch the koi from the levels above, leaning over the railing on the stairs to watch them circle below. The fish glistened pearly white and a charcoal black that looked as if it was the wrong texture to be underwater. They were speckled orange that was almost red, and mottled patterns obscured by the other koi rolling past. There was a flash of a whisker, a flick of a tail. The image of the fish was distorted, bulging and dilating. The pond's rippling surface was disturbed by a thin flow of water, which they called a waterfall, even though that description was generous at best. The waterfall fell from the fourth floor and splashed into the pond with a sound that echoed through the whole lower level. Marcy's days went something like this. In the morning, she would announce to her Instagram followers what she would be working on. Some days she worked on how the fish writhed together as they swam, how they confused the eye, their scales melding together like a herd of zebra. The edges of each fish blurring until there were no longer individuals, but just a mass of fish. The effect was hard to draw without it looking like she couldn't draw fish. Some days she worked on using charcoal, an airy, dry medium, yet making it look wet and slippery. She worked on conveying motion, not a moment frozen in time when the fish was once in motion, but on tricking the viewer into thinking the fish moved as you watched. Some days she took reference pictures of the pond to show her followers. Some days she'd run up into the museum before it opened and take a picture of one of the pieces, then incorporate its use of color, of negative space, of line thickness in her own work. She would then spend the day sketching, since she basically had 8 hours to herself, and at the end of the day she'd show her followers what she'd done. Her supervisors didn't care as long as she took care of everyone who came her way, didn't leave charcoal smudges on anything, including her forehead, and remembered to feed the fish. No one thought, for a second, that she'd forget to feed the fish. The problem was that Marcy's two goals worked against each other. If she wanted her number of followers to rise steadily, she had to keep posting her sketches, regularly, a new one every day. She felt like they had to be a certain quality now, too. While at the beginning it seemed like she would use her sketches as practice, as studies for her portfolio pieces, now it felt like the daily sketches were taking away time from her working on her portfolio, which should really be taking up the bulk of her time. She was ready to move on to real pieces, but she had to keep doing her studies because the people liked them. She worried that if she took a few days off to work on her portfolio, she would lose people's interest. And she'd been told not to post pictures of her portfolio pieces, even those in progress. She didn't have an answer except to hope that she'd finish her sketches earlier in the day, or that more time magically appeared, or that the sketches turned good enough for her to use those in her portfolio, except that she'd already posted pictures of those. Or that she'd be able to work at home, with everyone running around screaming, her mom crashing in to ask her to finish up dinner because her younger brother left his shoes at the soccer field and they had to go get them, and her baby brother had an ear infection and had to go to the doctor, and her dad was running late, and her middle brother had offended the neighbors by throwing water balloons, and he was grounded, and in protest he was playing music so loud that the floors thumped. So, that was not happening. In the calm of the empty lower level of the museum, sitting on the wide marble edge of the pond, Marcy tried her hand at a slightly more cartoony style than usual to celebrate the opening of the pop art exhibit upstairs. She had run upstairs before the exhibit had opened and stood before the glory of a full wall canvas, splashed with bright colors of octopi and happy dancing flowers, a barrage of activity, at first jovial until she stared at it long enough that it became manic, demented, almost grotesque. She snapped a picture and hurried away. Now she could hear the crowd rumble up the spiral staircase, looking down at the waterfall and the koi, looking down on her as she sketched, never descending to the lower level to take a closer look. A splash from the pond and Marcy started. The koi had been rowdy lately, almost like they were agitated. They splashed and snapped, and a few times one or another had jumped almost completely out of the water. She blamed the koi's agitation on the increased crowds for the pop art exhibit, spinning up and down the stairs, their voices rolling to the lower level like thunder. But as the day went on, she started to wonder if someone had dropped something into the pond, something that was upsetting the fish. It'd be tempting to pour a soda or something into the waterfall from the third floor. It'd be tempting to drop a rock to watch it splash. Marcy wouldn't put it past people, and she was considering asking someone to check the pond, maybe turn off the waterfall for a minute so they could see the bottom, and check if there was anything weird in there. Feisty today, aren't they? Marcy scrambled up to see Josh, one of her supervisors, standing behind her, peering into the pond. Sorry, she said. She usually scooted over to her seat at the welcome desk whenever someone entered the lower level, but she'd been too caught up in her sketch to notice him. He gave her a pointed look, but waved away her apology and turned back to the pond. Think one of them will jump the waterfall? What? You know, one will jump up the waterfall and turn into a dragon. She had no idea what he was talking about, and her face must have shown it. Really? He said, looking slightly smug. You draw koi all the time. Are you telling me that you don't know any of the lore about them? I've not heard about that, no. Yeah, in the wild they hit a waterfall, and then they try and try to jump it, and eventually, after 100 years of trying, one of them makes it, and he turns into a dragon. She looked at the pond and the narrow stream of water falling from above. She'd seen trout jump waterfalls in documentaries about bears, but this looked nothing like that. The koi would have to jump several stories straight up in the air. And then what would they jump into? There wasn't another pond up there, just a spout that came out of a pipe in the wall. The poor fish would flop onto the fourth floor landing and flop around in front of the postmodern exhibit. Unless at the top of the waterfall it turned into a dragon and didn't need another pool because it would fly into the air and crash around upstairs. But that was a ridiculous image because the koi wouldn't make the jump in the first place. That's why they're symbols of perseverance, Josh said. They try and they try, even though it seems impossible. But when they succeed, go big or go home, am I right? I guess, she said. How's your portfolio going? He asked. Her eyes snapped up from the pond to him. How do you know about that? You mentioned it on your Instagram. You follow me on Instagram? Of course, he said. Oh, that reminds me. He leaned in, the way he did when he was correcting behavior, but still trying to look like Marcy's friend at the same time. Mr. Cool Boss. Stop taking pictures of the McDonald right. You are not above the no photography signs. She shifted, knowing this was her second strike today. Sorry. He did his pointed look slash wave it off thing again, which was super confusing, and walked away, heading up the stairs. Work on your portfolio, he called. As soon as he was out of sight around the turn in the stairs, Marcy rolled her eyes and glared at the pond. What did Josh know? One of the fish flapped a tail in a splash. The koi did not calm down. In fact, they got worse. Their flailing splashed water across the floor on the lower level. Marcy had to stop sitting on the edge of the pond or risk soaking her sketch pad or her uniform. The fish regularly cleared the water, their bodies arching in the air, their mouths gaping, eyes wide. Time seemed to slow at the apex of their jump, water droplets hanging, sparkling in the air. Marcy sketched the way the water spiraled around the fish, the way it formed jagged waves off fins and imperfect globules off tails. She was fascinated by how, when they jumped, they became a single fish, an individual instead of part of the rolling school below. Then they started jumping out of the pond. The first time, the koi landed on the wide pond edge that Marcy used to use as a seat. It hit hard, with a wet thump and an explosion of water against the marble. Its mouth opened and closed as if gasping, as if dazed. Its fins flickered weakly, unable to push itself back into the pond. Marcy freaked out. She shrieked and ran from behind the welcome desk, skidding to a stop beside the fish. Her sneakers squeaked and slipped on the wet floor, and her arms windmilled before she reached out and jerked back. Should she touch it? Could she touch it? Its gills pulsed, and it looked her dead in the eye, and she flipped it back into the pond, where it shimmied and flailed to right itself, then swam away. Marcy stood, breathing hard. In the brief moment she'd touched it, it had felt heavier than she'd expected, more solid. She ran back to the welcome desk and called Josh. They had an emergency meeting after the museum closed for the day. At least Marcy thought of it as an emergency. No one else in the room seemed all that concerned. As Marcy sat on the edge of her seat, pulled up straight, everyone else walked in slowly, laughing with each other and holding fresh mugs of coffee. They took lazy seats around the conference table. Marcy folded and refolded her fingers. She couldn't figure out if she usually folded them with her left thumb on top or her right. At the moment, they both felt unnatural. The director of guest services, her supervisor's supervisor, and the building manager had to finish their conversation about the placement of one of the sculptures in the pop art exhibit. People weren't realizing it was a sculpture and kept touching it. They were debating changing the signage or putting up a rope barrier, which would alter the meaning of the piece. Marcy had very little patience for any of it. Finally, "All right, so the fish? One jumped out?" "They're all jumping out," Marcy said. "Or at least they're all jumping. Only one has fallen out, but I bet more do tomorrow." "Are they going to jump out overnight? Do we need to get someone to watch over them while the museum is closed?" "Nah, we'll just turn off the waterfall. They wouldn't have any reason to jump then." "Should we just turn off the waterfall until they calm down?" "I don't see why we should. As long as someone's watching them during the day, they'll be fine. The kid threw that one back in without any problems. Seems to me she's got it under control." Marcy did not feel like she had anything under control. "More than the fish, there's the problem with the floor," said one of the people Marcy didn't recognize. "The wet floors on the lower level are a problem." There was a murmur of agreement from everyone but Marcy. "Okay," the guest services director said. "Kid, you're the accessible entrance ticketer, right?" He turned to Josh. "Can we add on some duties to that position? It doesn't seem like it's a taxing job." Josh agreed because he was a traitor. "Great, so kid, you're going to be in charge of mopping up and putting the fish back if they jump out. Does that take care of it?" "Great." They all stood and left, but Marcy sat as stunned as the fish. She had never felt more betrayed. Betrayed by her cushy job, betrayed by Josh, betrayed by the koi. The next few days, as soon as they turned on the waterfall, the koi went crazy. They churned the pond until it bubbled and sloshed like a hot tub. Then the splashing began. Marcy had a stack of cheap towels on a rolling cart and a mop that she wrung out in a neon yellow mop wringer. She dumped the water into one of the bathroom toilets at least 3 times a day. A bright yellow floor sign took up residence in front of the pond, ruining any artistic aesthetic it may have had. "Wet floor, piso mojado." And then there were the fish. Their leaps took them higher and higher, over Marcy's head, even with the first landing. Most of the koi managed to turn as they fell, diving gracefully back into the water, nose first with minimal splash. but others arched too much in the air, or took the initial jump at too much of an angle, bursting from the pond sideways to skip over the floor like a thrown stone. And Marcy would run to them, scoop up the fish in her arms, and toss it back into its pool. The bigger fish jumped the furthest, so some of her rescuees were 3 feet long. One made it to the first floor, and she had to dash up the spiral staircase to grab it before any of the visitors tried to touch it. She considered throwing it back over the railing, but instead charged down the stairs with it squirming in her arms. Suddenly, it wasn't just her goals that were working against each other. It was that the koi's goals were working against both of hers. She didn't have time for her sketches, much less her portfolio. Her number of followers plateaued around 70,000, and she offered up scrappy pencil sketches with water stains at the end of each day. She couldn't really be mad about her job requiring her to do work. What she could do was beat herself up about how lazy she was that she couldn't find time to work at home. She could be staying up all night. She could find some studio space at a community center, or rent a storage locker and go in and work, or something. It was a Thursday when the koi started reaching the second floor. Marcy didn't even have time to tell her followers her plans for the day before the waterfall was turned on, and the koi were leaping, and Marcy was on her knees with a towel, her hair already falling out of its clip. So she gave up. She gave up on dry pants. She gave up on her Instagram goal, which she'd given a good try, but was clearly not going to happen. Then, as a koi splashed water right in her eyes, she gave up on her portfolio. And then on art school. Whatever. She'd just work at the museum and mop up after the fish for the rest of her life. She took a photo of the roiling water and posted it with damp and pruny fingers. A few minutes later, a koi made a jump for it. A piddly jump in comparison to most. And Marcy caught a photo of it before grabbing another towel to clean up its mess. Around mid-morning, she lugged a big orange fish off the tile and, sure that it wasn't going to die in the next 2 seconds, took a selfie with it. She checked during lunch, and to her shock, people loved her koi reports. She'd gotten 2,000 new followers in a matter of hours. She stared at the number, at the notifications rolling in, at the comments cheering on the koi. She blinked at her phone and stared up into space, her chicken salad sandwich stalled halfway to her mouth. That afternoon, she took more pictures of the koi. Koi in the water, koi in mid-flight, koi on the floor, pictures of herself mopping up after them. Her numbers kept rising. Visitors started to come downstairs. Not because of her Instagram, she wasn't that deluded, but because as the visitors scaled the stairs, fish would sail past them, up and down as if they were on a trampoline. People gathered, watching the pond churn, gasping as the fish jumped up, applauding at its height or applauding at Marcy's deft handling of the koi with poor reentry accuracy. People started to pay attention to the individual koi. There was a big black one who regularly made it to eye level on the second floor. There was a white and orange one that performed jerky gymnastics in the air. Marcy gave them names and provided updates on their progress. A woman from the museum outreach program stopped by and grilled Marcy on her social networking strategy. And an hour later, the museum was sharing her photos on Facebook, and suddenly she had 6,000 more followers. A couple of the docents were sent down to answer visitor questions about the fish, and although they clearly held more power in the museum hierarchy, they treated Marcy like she was chief executive koi officer. They arranged for some mats to be brought in, and made signs that warned the visitors that the lower level was a splash zone. They uncovered a couple of industrial-sized floor mops that made cleanup go faster. Marcy did an interview with the local news, which she watched at home that evening, but couldn't hear over a loud argument going on in the kitchen. She went upstairs, closed the door to her room, and got out her portfolio. The noise and the chaos became foam, swirling and seething. The bass beat through the walls was the hum of visitors crowding around. The shrill and piercing tantrums, the visitors squealing as they were splashed. The clanging of washing dishes, the visitors vying for spots on the stairs. The fish rolled and churned across her canvas, and her family tossed and rocked across her life. And through all of it, there was a stillness, a water drop suspended as a fish arced, its flight captured at a moment of greatness. There was energy in chaos, and if she embraced it, harnessed it, handled it with deft hands and then rose above, there was glory. The next week, the fish made it to the third floor, and a biologist came out to say they were close. Close to what? No one was sure, but close. they decided to leave the waterfall on and have a small crew stay the night. Summer was coming to a close. Marcy had 137,000 followers and climbing. She had one more piece to finish on her portfolio. She drew through the night in the quiet of the museum, hanging on to the turmoil of the koi. As the sun rose through the windows on the upper floors, Marcy sat back to look at her piece, and the black koi made one final leap. The 20% True podcast was written and produced by me, Carolyn Rahaman. Music was composed by Kamiku. If you like the show, please rate and review on iTunes so new people can find it. Follow the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/20percenttrue, where you can leave comments, ask questions, and post pictures of your pet koi. Check out my website, 20percenttrue.blogspot.com, for updates, thoughts on writing, and book reviews. Or follow me on Twitter at Carrie and the Hits.